Welcome. We're live, pal. Andrew, I literally have no idea what we're going to talk about today. Like, almost nothing happened last night on Monday Night Raw right before the show started.
Oh, boy. I have to tell you, I was not prepared for last night.
What's going on, man? So you were telling me off air, you actually did like a news bit or something about this, right?
Yeah, I just did an interview with WDVM in D.C. They just did like a quick, like 5-minute interview with me about the situation because they it's going to get some press. Obviously, it's going to get some media attention for sure. And this was my third request of the day. And this is the only one I really did because I knew the people that were there. So it seems like it's something is happening here. And it's not going to be good for WWE. I mean, they got ahead of the story, which was, in the PR world, it's a major positive, but I don't know how ahead they are.
So there's been so much stuff written about this. And like originally I know Sean had some stuff. I've read a couple of different reports. Like, do you even understand what the consensus is on what the frustration was last night?
So I got what time exactly did this happen? Do you know?
I don't. I know they left like right before, maybe as the show was going on.
Okay. So I got a text around 10 o'clock from WWE regarding, I mean like WWE, it was the same official statement, you know, that everybody got, that Sean posted. So that is their narrative. That is the WWE take on this. That is the official. What Sean posted is the official stance, is the WWE official statement. They are claiming that I don't want to fill in the blanks because there's a lot of stuff that was said to me that I have no way of confirming, obviously, right, on both sides of the story. I think the truth is going to lie somewhere in the middle. It always does. But WWE stance is they refuse to work. And in that press release, there were two quotes that really stood out. Do you have it in front of you, Garrett, by any chance?
The WWE thing?
Yeah.
I can. I'm sure I can find it here.
I have it in my text here. All right. So there were two things that stood out. Do you want me to read the statement?
Go for it.
Because it's interesting.
It's ridiculous. Go for it.
A little bit. Yeah. This is the official. This is the official WWE statement. Okay. 10:32, I got this message. When Sasha Banks and Naomi arrived to the arena this afternoon, they were informed of their participation in the main event of Raw, of tonight's Monday Night Raw. During the broadcast, they walked into WWE Head of Talent Relations, John Laurinaitis' office, with a suitcase in hand, placed their title championship belts on his desk. I wonder if anybody got in trouble for that. Belts. Yes. Put it on his desk and walked out. They claimed they weren't respected enough as tag team champions, even though they had 8 hours to rehearse and construct their match. They claimed that they were uncomfortable in the ring with two of their opponents, even though they'd had matches with them in those individuals in the past with no consequences. And this is fascinating. Monday Night Raw is a scripted TV show whose characters are expected to perform the requirements of their contracts. We regret that we were unable to deliver as advertised tonight's main event. That is the first time WWE has apologized for changing the script. Okay.
Okay. So
there's a couple things here.
That's really rich, right? Because yeah. There's two things that pop out to me. A, they change the friggin' main event all the time. Like,
all the time.
You know, how many stories have there been, Vince, you know, changing the show as it goes on and people have to, like, you know, race to finish themselves. But the second thing, at the upfronts, aren't they trying to portray themselves as live sports?
Yes. Like, that is a whole shift. Every AEW as well. AEW, yeah. And WWE shifted, I think, recently. They didn't really consider themselves live sports. USA had them under drama for a while, and now the whole, you know, everything has changed for contract TV rights fees and everything. Sports is getting paid a lot more, so better position yourself like that. But two things stood out here, okay? One, the fact that they said that this is a scripted TV show, and they're treating it like, you know, George Clooney walked off the set of ER because he was very upset when they were going live, you know, or something like that. But the other thing is that they had 8 hours to rehearse. I've never seen WWE say that ever, that they're rehearsing. And they also say it said that they were they claimed that they were uncomfortable in the ring with the two of the opponents. Now, if they did say that, right? And I was told that these claims that the WWE statement comes from, these are direct accounts from Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis, okay? This isn't the what was sent out was the direct account of what happened. That is what they are saying. Now, there's another story out there. I've seen a couple of reports that, you know, they were trying to talk to producers and writers and try to piece, you know, fix what they were unhappy with. And they were told to correct their attitudes multiple times.
Wow.
And if that is true, listen, I got a 6-year old. When I tell my kids, correct your attitude, they get, you know, they get a little bit more hysterical. Now, were they met with a wall immediately, or were they, you know, did it escalate to that level? That's what we're going to find out. And listen, I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. I don't think WWE, you know, intentionally tried to do something to harm these two in any way as far as the characters go, because there's a lot of invested interest in making this work for them.
Can I ask you a question? Complete hypothetical, okay?
Yeah.
But let's say Roman Reigns went to Vince and was like, I'm not going to do this. Or maybe they didn't even do that. Maybe they just said, can we like work on this? This doesn't work out for us. Do you think Roman Reigns gets as much pushback as what sounds like Sasha and Naomi did?
I don't know. You know, it depends on how you go in there. You know, like I think if Roman kicked the door open and went guns a-blazing, you know, like saying, Vince, I'm not doing this nonsense, he might be met with a wall. But I don't think Sasha and Naomi did that. I think it escalated to that point where they were just pissed off and they said, F this, and walked out. But like you said, Roman has a different stance in the eyes of Vince. But, you know, Vince has fired people that are on top. He's fired Warrior at the peak of, you know, 1991 when they needed talent like that. He's gotten rid of talent in the past that he's had disagreements with. So I think it really matters on what mood he's in. But did you see that post online? I haven't been able to verify this from anybody in WWE, because this is the WWE statement. I've asked and they said, this is what happened. This is how it happened. This is how we're going to address it. But there is a report that they tried to talk to like everybody before they went to John Laurinaitis and Vince. And I believe that. I 100% believe that. I don't think they, you know, went into Vince's office or John Laurinaitis' office with, I'm leaving, you know, you're going to change this or I'm leaving. The story is that they went to a producer, they went to whatever, agents, producers, writers, to try to fix this and kind of figure it out, and nobody could really figure it out. I think that's more of the reality of what happened here. But, you know, when you look at it, and this is going to be obviously the WWE spin. So they're going to say, well, how bad do we do by these people? We put them in the main event. One was going to challenge for the title. The other one was also going to challenge for a title. They're the tag team champions. They have this, you know, they're in the main event of Raw. They're going to be, you know, two top matches on the pay-per-view. What else do you want from us? Yep. That's going to be their stance. And, you know, PR-wise, optics-wise, they're going to win that, right? They're going to win that. I'm not saying that I agree with WWE here at all, but in their PR battle to change the optics of this, that's going to be their stance. Like, well, what else did you want from us?
Yeah,
I don't have a stance on this because I don't know what the truth is, to be honest. I only know what WWE told me. And now you're seeing a lot of the rumors trickle down. We're probably going to find out from Naomi and Sasha as to what the hell happened on Monday. But what do you think on this? Dave also brought up that there might be a contract situation here, right?
Yeah. So first, there's a comment here. And I want to give us the opportunity to explain this. So Zaya says, dude, you can't compare two grown women to 6-year-old children. That is exactly Andrew's point.
That's my point.
It's ridiculous to talk to a 6-year-old that way because it doesn't work. And thus, how are you going to talk to two grown women that way if that is what happened? That was his point. He was not comparing.
My point is, yeah, exactly. You're not comparing. I'm not comparing these two to 6-year-old. I'm saying I don't speak to my 6-year-old that way and tell them, you know, your attitude and start telling them that you have an attitude. The second you tell someone you have an attitude, you know what? That attitude gets turned up. That's happened to me. If you tell me calm your attitude, I'm going to maybe get a little bit more hot if I believe
calm down. Right. Calm down.
Calm
famous
down.
Last words.
Calm down. That's what it is. Yeah. Do me
famous
a favor, girls.
Words.
Calm down. No.
Yeah, it doesn't work. It's not the way to handle talent, especially.
Exactly.
Okay, so I want to read because this just came out. I think this may have came out last night or this morning. So I believe this was Mike Johnson from PW Insider. He said, the belief among some is that the creative issue was not with Banks losing to Naomi, but how the duo would have been portrayed over the next several weeks, especially after they put so much time into building their team once Vince issued an edict that they would be teaming and winning the titles at Mania 38. And that after diving into building that team, they were going to wrestle each other and go off and put over other talent, leaving them exactly where, which apparently was the crux of the issue. WWE plan looks to have been that the Women's Tag Team Championship could have been downplayed until their next program. So what you said is also what I heard, which is Sasha. And so Naomi wins one of these matches and she faces one of the champions. Sasha faces possibly Ronda, which is actually a great match, by the way.
Yeah,
but
they were
both going to lose, and thus the tag team title thing, which they're into because they just won those titles. It was going to be sort of like, oh, now, you know, we're wrestling as singles and the belts are going to be sort of less important. Just, you know, we can't even defend the belts on paper. So that
I get that. Yeah. Listen, I totally get that because think about, you know, they want to elevate the title, right?
Yes.
And they're doing you as the company, they're doing it for you, obviously for themselves, but they're by them elevating and being protective of those titles, even though this is not real, they're going to elevate it for the next round of people that get that title and then the future of it. They, you know, I if that's the truth, right? If that's where we fall, you know what? They're absolutely in the right. They're questioning it. They don't want to position it and be marginalized as just a nothing champion. I'm thinking here how to word that. Some of this is my opinion. Most of this is my opinion, but from things that have been said to me, specifically from writers in that company. Okay.
Yes.
And I'm going to be honest with this. This was a couple years ago. And when Sasha got the Mandalorian gig.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
When Sasha got that, the same time I was told specifically by people, I would say this person was a writer there, or I don't think this person's a writer there still, but you know, the way that they were complaining, and they didn't say it to me like this, but they were really addressing it like, you know, I would say that they are maybe a little bit, some of them, a little bit less positive when the female talent approaches them with criticism compared to the men. Okay.
So that was my Roman point, right? That's what I was wondering, which is not only from a male and female standpoint, but from a star standpoint. Roman, Brock.
Yeah.
Roman plus Brock, I guess, in my head equals Rock. Roman, Brock, Seth, Randy, Cody. If those guys had gone up, Ronda, maybe Becky. Like if those folks had come up and in the same scenario, is this a different situation, or is it because Sasha and Naomi aren't at that tier in their eyes? Which to me, Sasha's the best. To me, Sasha is one of the best seven or eight wrestlers in the entire company and the best female wrestler in ring on the roster. So I have her in very high regard. Not that she can do no wrong, but I just think she's tremendous. So there may be some bias on my end just because of how big of a fan I am. But she seems to... There are always rumors kind of about how happy or unhappy she is there. Now, I think a big part of... Because people go, well, why did she, you know, sign up with them again? Part of it is she is so much of a bigger star to people... Not only in WWE because of that name, Sasha Banks, tremendous name, by the way.
Yeah.
Then she would be with her real name, right? Can she market herself to do stuff like the college football commercials, the Mandalorian, as Mercedes? Now, Mercedes is a pretty cool name too, but she's Sasha Banks to everybody. And Sasha Banks looks like somebody, is Snoop Dogg's cousin, feels like she's a bigger than life persona. And if she doesn't have that name, then she kind of has to kind of rebrand, restart, do all that stuff all over again. So that's part of it, because that's just a tremendous personality and star to people. They just know who that is. Now, yeah. I guess the thing that is interesting is the Naomi piece of this, because Naomi, she's been with this company for how long? She's done the Diva stuff. She's been world champion. But she didn't have like this fantastic run. I don't think she ever got elevated to where maybe she could have. But she also has a husband and a brother-in-law and a cousin to the brother-in-law also in that company. So you would seem that, you know, it would feel like she would be a little bit more protected than that, but maybe that's just not how it works.
And maybe she thought she is, and that's why she did it, you know?
And maybe she can. Maybe she feels a little bit like that. Yeah, that's possible too. Yeah. But I don't know what the... You know, there's no sport track like in the NFL and the NBA and MLB where I can go and look exactly what contracts are and when they're expiring and what their bonuses are. I don't think there is that one for a wrestler. Well, actually, there is. We just call him Dave. But I wish I knew like how much time, because I kind of remember like she re-upped fairly recently. So this I don't think this is a thing for Sasha where she's like, I want out, just for the reasons why I said, right? Because even if she was to eventually leave and go to AEW, she can't go to AEW as Sasha Banks, right? That's a WWE name.
Yeah, and also remember, a lot of it is how WWE positions you, right? And I absolutely love AEW. I tend to watch it more consistently because of the wrestling and the style of wrestling. But you know, would they be able to do the PR blitz that WWE does? And that the reality is no, right? They're not yet, at least. They don't have, you know, a 50-year, or let's say modern wrestling, a 30-year of Vince McMahon's vision of how public relations should be handled with professional wrestling. You don't have Nick Khan, which is very tied in to the sports media world, because he was an agent, right? He worked for that agency. CAA guy? You know, their reach is a little bit more, and I think for Sasha, she benefited from it. She was in Mandalorian, you know? Yeah. I don't see AEW getting that right now, at least. So, I it's very unfortunate for it to come to this, and you sometimes wonder, like, a mega company like that's so careful with everything that they do, everything is very controlled in that environment. You know, that statement positioned it as, like, we're going to bury the talent here. And whether or not it's true, we'll find out exactly where the truth is. I think some of it is true, what they're saying, obviously. But how did it get to this point? How do you get from, you know, whatever hour they got to the building, they worked on their stuff, then everything fell apart? How does things fall apart at 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock when the show is happening? That's my question. How does that happen?
It's a great question, and I guess I would need to know a little bit better the inside of that building on TV day. Like, who do they go to? You know, are they going to agents, or then they're going to producers? Or I'm sorry, they're going to producers, and then what's above a producer? When does it become Johnny Ace? When does it become Vince? But this is something that should have been buttoned down, you know, far earlier. And it's like, okay, either, you know, when it's 1 hour before the show starts, no more changes. We're either locked in or we're booting this thing out. Like, what's the deal? And then you have the rest of the hour to figure it out before you go showtime.
I got to read the story again, but is it being reported they met with John Laurinaitis first and then Vince? Because Vince was in Gorilla, apparently, when this was going down.
When they left, he found out, supposedly, while he was at Gorilla.
In Gorilla. Okay. Yeah. So, listen, if you're head of talent relations, your sole job is to prevent this from happening. I'm not saying John Laurinaitis is terrible at his job. I'm saying this is an unfortunate night for him. As head of talent relations, your job is to be diplomatic. You have to be totally diplomatic and attempt to fix this. Possibly he was. but it didn't get fixed at all. And that statement shows a lot of anger from the WWE side as to how it happened. You know, you got two, you got, you know, one very connected to your top talent and in a top position to face your women's champion to, as a tag team champion. The other one, multi-time, you know, women's champion. And one of your most recognizable female names in the company, and you let them walk out like this. Yeah, there's some more to this. This is that story. Someone in the chat said that statement has a lot of holes. Absolutely has a ton of holes. I don't know, man. I'm actually surprised. I'm really surprised because they're in a weird war right now as far as optics go, as far as happiness for talent and overall for the company. And the Cody thing was such a big win for them in their, yeah, in their minds, right?
Yeah.
And listen, if you're
it's great. It's been great so far. I love Cody on WWE.
WWE fan and you're not watching AEW, this is great for you. You have another top talent there that's really good. I'm surprised. I really am. I didn't post anything last night because I was trying to figure out what the hell was going on. But I don't know, man. Do you think they're going to be back? What's your opinion on it? You think they'll fix this? I think they're going to try.
I think they'll come back. I think things will be figured out. They're not going to fire them. They're not going to suspend them. I think that would look horrendous if they did.
Yeah.
And I think what's actually going to be, if they're not trying to resolve this today, it's the stuff that, like you did, you know, the news stuff where, you know, people pay attention. WWE wants the real world to pay attention to them in the promotion of big stuff, right? But they don't want the real world to pay attention to them when there's any negativity involved. So
sure.
I think they are going to clean up whatever they need to clean up if this becomes a bigger story sort of outside of this wrestling bubble.
The only thing, and I don't want to dive into it, I fear some of this will turn into more of like a racial situation for them, where I don't necessarily agree with that in this scenario. I don't think they're motivated, you know, I don't think John Laurinaitis' motivation, for example, was race-based or I do think it was very poorly handled. Very, very poorly handled. But I think they... Listen, this is all growing pains for that company. I think they're learning that the more mainstream eyeballs are on you, you have to be very careful how you handle a lot of this stuff. And yeah, unfortunately, I think they have to figure out how to handle and speak to female talent and how to position them in a way where, you know, it could be as something as simple as, you know, listen, who would be a male counterpart to Sasha Banks? Right?
It's a good question.
I'm going to give a terrible example, right? Terrible example. Let's say it's Seth Rollins.
Yeah.
Right? I'm going to use him as an example. And he's now and he's going and complaining to the writers and he's going to John Laurinaitis, right? Would he have been treated differently if, you know, is he treated differently in that position because, you know, he's a male talent versus a female talent? Because you hear stuff all the time, and that's generally not super positive about when talent goes and complains. And whenever you hear that, you're thinking, okay, well, why is this person being singled out like this in a negative way versus a male counterpart doing the same thing? You know, this shows something very interesting, and that's if you believe you are a valuable talent to the company, like Sasha Banks, very valuable. Naomi, very valuable, in my opinion. You now feel comfortable enough to say, hey, don't screw me over, right? And I think that's better positioning for the rest of that locker room with the rest of the women on that side, where, listen, if you're unhappy with something, go and say something to change it. And I'm willing to bet WWE is going to be a little bit more careful with this because they don't want to deal with the PR disaster that comes with a lot of this. A lot of the speculation as to why you reacted in a way.
Yep.
They don't want that. And they're in a very vulnerable position right now with this.
100%.
Did I do a good job at explaining that?
Yeah. Well, as a person of color, I always pull back on that. And I can't say whether or not it was race-based because the only optic we have is two African-American women are involved in this situation. So by the visual optic of that, it sort of is, you know, race-based just by, you know, what happened. But, you know, we have to know what the context is. We have to know what some of these conversations have been in the past. We have to know how many people of color are in that company that they could reach out to. How many women are in that company in those positions that they can reach out to? Because if it's just, you know, white guy, that's probably a bit of a problem, no matter the experience of those people in their job.
Professional wrestling has always been about and Northeastern. Let's talk about Northeastern wrestling, right? Their turn of the century, right? Early 1900s. Who were your world champions? The Italian guy, the Spanish guy, you know, and that's how it was because you were in New York territory.
Yeah.
And that is very important to a lot of communities.
Yeah.
That is tremendously important because you're watching TV and you're saying, this person is like me. This person looks like me. This person talks like me. They have my background. It gives you, it's a motivation piece. You know, I say this all the time. The Iron Sheik was a hero in my house.
Yeah. Heck yeah.
I forget about the anti-American resentment. Like, obviously, that's not cool. But for like the time, it was like, hey, you know, it's the Iron Sheik. My grandfather knew him when he was a little kid. Like, that was cool for me. Or Bruno. Like, my other grandfather was a huge fan of Bruno because he was Italian, you know?
So of course. Hero.
This is something that you look at. And I think it's really important for WWE to have people that look like their fans, that have a connection with their fans, being their champions.
Well,
this has always worked. I mean, Northeast wise, you know, especially it's been done a little bit more here, but
we only have to go back a few years and, you know, you saw grown men cry when Kofi Kingston won the title.
Oh,
right?
Yeah.
Like that's how important that was. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, there's going to be more coming out. We'll probably be talking about this also next week, unless it's resolved at that point. And it could possibly be resolved. I'm hoping it's going to be resolved
because it is. Yeah.
You know, Sasha more than Naomi, I think, you know, when it comes to talent, she's just ahead of the game to me. And I just don't understand. And there could be some start and stops with injuries and stuff. I don't understand why she's not.
Hey, Garrett, one other thing.
Creme de la creme. Yeah, go for it.
One other thing, right? This very well could have been them just losing it because of a really stupid finish, right? But think about how many stupid finishes these people do. Not the talent. I'm saying the company, right? How many times things are booked in a way that make no sense? Finn Balor, that rope breaking thing that never they went nowhere with it. Remember that? They do ridiculous, dumb finishes that lead to nothing all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe this is an awakening moment as far as booking goes for the writers and the producers, that maybe we need to think a little bit deeper as to, okay, continuity matters. Canon matters. Why is Sasha going to pin, you know, why is Naomi going to pin Sasha if that's what was going to happen? If it doesn't lead to something that makes a lot of sense. This changing minds constantly, it's come to this point. And maybe that's the biggest issue here. Maybe that's a learning lesson for them. Bad creative is going to create angry talent, and angry talent's going to walk out of your company.
Yeah. Like, and, you know, we'll figure, you know, we'll hopefully have more information soon. But let's move on, because I don't know if we've ever spent a full half an hour on one specific topic.
Sorry.
Maybe some of those Cody ones. Maybe the Cody ones early on we did. But, you know, related WWF or F, you know why you said Iron Sheik? I just watched the Wrestling Classic pay-per-view from 1985. 1985, I watched this, you know, pay-per-view because I was doing some other stuff, but I got to see the Iron Sheik, so my brain is telling me WWF right now.
Sheiky baby.
WWE's Hell in a Cell. They made what I guess is the main event, Cody and Seth in the cell. I mean, we thought that this was happening last week, that logically it was going to happen. But no Roman on that show. No titles on that show. And so my question is do you think that they are going to do this fake thing where they strip Roman of what would essentially be the Raw belt? Because if he's going to take this pay-per-view off, this pay-per-view has no title. And I wonder, could they do something where it's like, you know, Roman is unable to wrestle at Hell in a Cell. We're going to let him keep his SmackDown title. he's going to have to give up the Raw title and Cody and Seth is going to be for the Raw title. Could you see something like that?
I think that would damage that title, that Raw title, to mean less than it possibly means now. You're going to tell me, you're essentially saying like, well, no, this is the important title, not this one. Here, Cody, take it, or Seth, you take it. You know, I can't see them doing that because they very much are about the networks thinking that it's an equal split here.
Yeah.
Cody definitely has appeased the USA Network guys by having this, you know, big star that they feel confident that WWE is going to position in a big way. That would just hurt him. But you also have to think about it. You know, he's off this show. He's going to be on the next couple shows for sure, the next pay-per-views. But I'm guessing, I mean, maybe they do that title unification for the tag titles at this show.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe something happens on SmackDown where it doesn't happen and with an interference or whatever, and now you're in that cell.
Yeah.
So that's your big title match, you know.
And I even broached this with Dave on Wrestling Observer Radio on Friday, because we were trying to figure this out, like, who do you prop up to be main eventers? He's like, is it going to be Lashley? You know, who can it be? And I was like, what about Riddle and Orton as a tag team? Maybe you can make that tag team title that important to where you'd prop it up and, you know, Usos, and then, you know, maybe you create a tournament for the next shot. And like, you just make this to be a big deal. I would be so into that, because Orton and Riddle is my favorite thing in WWE right now. Cody is a very close second, by the way.
Yeah, everybody's. Yeah, it's unanimous, especially with it's younger great. Viewers.
So I love it. So I would love to see that. Okay.
Yeah. What do you think they're going to do?
I think that they probably don't give a crap about the Hell in the Cell, because they're worried about Money in the Bank, SummerSlam, and the UK show.
Yeah.
So this can be like a glorified, you know, 3-hour Raw to them for all they care, I think. Yeah.
But this also goes to exactly what was reported after WrestleMania. And it's that they really haven't thought about the opponents for Roman. He has both title belts and he has no opponents.
The lack of foresight to put both belts on him and then to whatever the negotiation was, to say, okay, yeah, you can take a lot of time off now. Like, can we get the first belt off of him at least first, and then I don't know. We'll see what happens. But it does feel like there wasn't a lot of organization and foresight here with this thing.
Yeah.
Okay, let's switch gears. This is completely different than what we just talked about. And I was thinking of this when I was watching AEW Dynamite, and I thought, no, this is a good question to ask Andrew. So just to preface a little bit, my co-host on the Fight Game podcast on this website, John LaRocca, when they were starting to lean towards Hardys versus Young Bucks, he was completely against it. And I've even talked to Dave and said, you know, when you put the two of them together, I feel like it pulls Jeff down a little bit. I'd rather have him as a single. But Dave's point was, well, you got to get whatever the Hardy Boys name means, you got to get the usage of that out first before you then figure out what to do. And so I completely get that. But I'm watching this Young Bucks and Hardys thing, and John was saying how it didn't even seem like the crowd was that interested. And I was like, well, you know, let's give it a couple weeks. And then last week, after Jeff Hardy pins Darby, right? And it does look like that's where they're moving towards, because it's going to be Adam Cole and Jeff Hardy. And I'm assuming that the Hardy Boys versus the Young Bucks comes out of that match. But I don't even think the crowd is that fired up about this match. And it kind of pulls the Young Bucks down a little bit. Like, they almost feel like they're... status on this card coming up is not that important. What do you think about where they are on this card?
For the paper, for Double or Nothing.
Yeah,
I would say, you know, it could just be one of those things like, hey, listen, we should get this out of the way, right?
Right.
This is something that we want to do. The next pay per views for a while with this should be a pay per view match. And they want to get it out of the way. If that's the case, then that's cool. That's fine. I want to see it. Is it like the hot match of the season for me? No, but I definitely want to see it. They had that one other match in Ring of Honor, that WrestleMania weekend where was it Ring of Honor they had it? It was Ring of Honor.
I think so. It was like the day before they re-debuted at WWE, right?
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, that wasn't done in the way that they probably would have done it because it wasn't on a big TV channel or whatever, a big production network. I'm okay with it. I'm not poo-pooing on it, but I'm curious to see what the build is for this, because this technically should be like a dream, like legendary match. It's like, you know, the Rockers facing the Rock and Roll Express. I mean, it's the same equivalence, really, right? Generationally, they were influenced from them. There is this weird generational influence between all those tag teams over the years. So, I mean, this is the closest that we'll ever get to that type of dream match. Yeah. I think Jeff looked fantastic last week. I'll tell you, I was very impressed on how he was moving. I'm sure he was feeling it.
He probably wasn't moving well later after that match.
Yeah, but he was moving great. And again, maybe these are one of those things that they just want to get out of the way, these matches, because they don't know how much longer they're going to have them. I don't know the terms of Jeff's contract or Matt's contract.
So let me, again, I'm going to use this word optics again. Now,
it's stuck in my head.
To a specific fan base who understands sort of the evolution of what the Hardy Brothers did. If not for the Hardy Brothers, the Young Bucks are probably a much different tag team, right? Like you can definitely tell there was some inspiration there, right? The influence. And if we know that piece of it, and we know that Jeff and Matt are old guys, does that kind of make the Young Bucks old guys at the same time? Like, if these are the guys they studied and now they're facing them, and this is like it's not the 2010 version of the Young Bucks versus the 2010 version of the Hardys, because the Hardys, even though they weren't fantastic as they were in the early and the mid 2000s, they were still able to do more. And I just wonder if by the Hardys looking old, does it make the Young Bucks, does it age them a little bit? And maybe there's something to that. Maybe not. Maybe I'm overthinking this, but this has just been maybe the coldest that I've seen the Young Bucks since AEW started. And, you know, early on they were losing some stuff, but then when they finally figured out, hey, we're the anchor of this division. Yeah, I think they're really overshadowed right now by a couple of different teams. And I don't know if I've said that before.
Yeah, for the Bucks, not the Hardys. I think the Hardys are in a good spot right now. You know, they're getting those big pops. They're very much to a specific fan base, which, by the way, I'm not in that. Like, first of all, I absolutely think Jeff Hardy's fantastic. I think what they've done is tremendous. But there is that whole Jeff Hardy singles run from the 2010s, like late 2000s to 2010s, where there is a younger viewer, like my brother, that's in his late 20s, mid-20s, that absolutely loves Jeff Hardy and loves Matt Hardy. And to him, this is a big deal. I think this is definitely a big deal. I think, you know, who are the Hardys influenced by, right? The Rockers, Midnight Express, Rock and Roll Express. So you see that transition with talent. There's a great, this is when, was it Being the Elite? Maybe this is like a very early Being the Elite when they would do it with like Gallows and Anderson. But there's this great backstage thing where Doc Gallows comes in, he's doing his Sex Ferguson thing, and he goes, F me sideways, which one's Sean and which one's Marty? And he's looking at the Young Bucks. I mean, fantastic, right? I mean, that is the generational evolution of it.
Yeah.
First of all, hysterical. Gallows is one of the funniest people in wrestling. But I think you have to do it. You don't have a choice. You have to do this match. And probably Tony thinks, like, when else am I going to do this? The Bucks definitely have cooled off.
Maybe purposely, because you have to allow some of those other teams to get over. But you know, the match that I still want to see the most is Moxley and Danielson against the Bucks, and maybe Moxley and Danielson against FTR. Those are probably like right there with each other.
Yeah.
Okay, so we are, a week and a half away from being in Vegas.
Yeah, man.
F4W convention. What is your temperature on this Double or Nothing card? Like, are you feeling like it's a giant card? So, you know, we can compare it to September when we went to All Out. I think we were like really feeling that that thing was going to be great. And it was. It fulfilled everything. What are you feeling about this show in comparison?
I'm into it for sure. I think that double that All Out was something very special because you had three debuts, right? You had CM Punk's debut match. You had Danielson and you had Adam Cole. So you had a lot of moving parts here. I think that felt very important for the history of the company. I think this is a tremendously solid card. They're back in Vegas, which they haven't been in a while. They're back to their plan. I think it's going to be a fantastic show. I'm excited. Listen, am I excited for the no sleep? No, I'm not excited for not sleeping on the travel. But I am very excited to see that show and how they play out. And they're also in a nice big building. You know, things are changing a little bit for that company. This show will solidify the next... this show, I'll tell you, you know what? Let me backtrack a little bit. This show, I think, is going to be more important for the business of AEW because everything they do after this is all about getting those numbers up, getting that big build for All Out, and then really killing it that third and fourth, you know, the third quarter, the fourth quarter, especially going into your negotiations for new TV for 2024. Mm-hmm. That's how I would position this, you know, do this match now, start hot into All Out, and then continue it. Go, you know, 130 miles an hour to pop those numbers so you get a better negotiation when you sit down at the table trying to negotiate that next deal for 2024. They're in a very interesting position where everything they do matters right now, and right. It should, you know, and luckily for them, they normally make the right decisions here. You know, obviously, it happens that they don't, but I think... you're going to see this company really get hot the next, you know, X amount of months leading into that contract negotiation.
So we had a quick question. I want to see if I can push this out. About from Balor Club guy who reached out to us again last week. Update on All Out. Like that's the, you know, they're doing the Forbidden Door show in Chicago. Like, Do you think that it's also going to still be in Chicago, like same old All Out, like same place, even though they would have just ran it, you know, a couple months before?
Yeah, that's a great question. I don't know. I as far as I know, everything is pointing to Chicago. I haven't heard anything that it's not. Maybe they see this as like, listen, you know, the United Center is the equivalent of MSG, and yeah. You know, coming back and running the Nassau Coliseum. A couple months later is not necessarily a terrible thing. Maybe that's the justification. I don't know, but you know, they have been running Chicago a ton. I would say All Out, if you're going to run Chicago for All Out, it should be in that United Center. And they just haven't done it. Maybe they'd really enjoy... Listen, man, that Chili's is really good. Okay? In Huffman Estates. That Chili's is really cool. And that brunch place is fantastic. The pancakes were great. Did you go to that brunch place?
I don't think so.
It was like the only one. It was called like Strawberry Jams or something. I forgot what it was. Maybe John, our producer, remembers. But the food was great.
I will tell you where we ended up. Was it after the pay-per-view? It may have been after the pay-per-view. I can't remember what night, but we ended up at Domino's. That's where Brian Alvarez.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
you because know what nothing was open late, so we ended up at Domino's, so Brian could eat. Dave was there. John Muse, who some people may know, was there. It was kind of funny, you know. It's like there's a Domino's anywhere, in Chicago,
I will tell you where I ended up. I ended up at the side of the road, hitching a ride with strangers. I was hiking up my pants, showing my legs, begging people to take me back to the hotel. Thank God Tony arrived and took. There were no Ubers, no taxis, nothing. Tony, thank God, got out of bed at like 1 o'clock in the morning and picked up Rich and some of the other guys. And
Denise too, right? Wasn't Denise too, like
me though? She wasn't with me. And then I just had two guys that I knew from like the neighborhood that were at the show drive by, and they're like, Andrew. I'm like, listen, what do you want? I took I'm like, take me home, please. That was the worst part of the night, honestly. That was insanely terrible. I did not want to walk 3 hours to the hotel because...
Well, you know what we're probably going to do for the next one? I think Tony Lear, yeah. Tony Lear might be thinking about a bus, so.
I think that's the best way.
It's a great idea. I think everybody who went to that show is like, I'm in. Whatever it costs, I'm just not getting stuck after 1 o'clock in the morning trying to get home.
Yeah.
All right, last thing for us, you know, because we've got to get out of here on time, or else I'm going to hear Lance in my headset here.
You're going over.
The last thing. Dave and I talked about this on Wrestling Observer Radio on Friday. All the details weren't really out. I'm not sure if all the details are really out now, but more details are out. Nature Boy Ric Flair, they are planning on a return final match, hopefully final match, with FTR, Rock and Roll Express, and possibly Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, I think is the rumor.
That's the rumor.
But I guess it's going to coincide with StarCast. Is that true? Is that what you've heard?
Is this a StarCast production? Is this a Conrad Thompson production?
It's a Conrad Thompson production.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's StarCast.
Yeah. Listen, he's 70, what? 74?
It's right? Crazy.
The guy almost died. He was in a coma. I'll tell you though, he looked good with Jay Lethal. He's still bumping on his side, taking those side pads. 74 years old. You know what? How many 74-year-olds do you know that could do that? But with that said, I know a lot of people are very concerned for his health. I don't think Conrad's an idiot. I don't think Rick's an idiot. No. I think Conrad is a very smart business guy. I choose to believe, and talking to Conrad, listen, a lot of people have opinions on people. I've spoken to Conrad a couple times. I've texted him a bunch of times. I don't think he's going to put his father-in-law's life at risk. And I don't think Rick is going to do that. I think that they believe that he's going to be able to do something. Now, whether or not he does a lot or does a little, I don't know. But he's been training for a while. I don't know. I don't know how to feel about this. Would it be cool to see Rick one last time do something? Yeah, something. Now, do I want to see him do everything that Rick does? No, I don't want to see him do everything that he does. But, you know, maybe he got motivated by the Austin stuff. You know, Austin was a guy that never was going to work again. And he had a great match with Kevin Owens. So maybe having FTR take most of it, he gets tagged in. It does a couple chops, maybe does a Flair backdrop and, you know, does the knee. No, beg. And that's it. That's all he does. And puts a figure four on and he wins.
Yes. The way that I feel about this is some of this is like, do you know who you are? You are the Nature Boy Ric Flair. You don't have to do any of this. Like, continue to use, you know, whatever your name value is so that you don't have to wrestle again. Like, you should be trying to figure out, how do I, you know, keep my lifestyle and whatever and not get in the ring? Because that's the hard part, like, right? Like, you've done that. I'm sure there's some sort of comeback thing, you know, that's definitely
what
a
else
big
does
part
he do?
For sure.
So he has this last match, right? He does this last thing. Okay, you did it. You went out again. He retired. This would be his third last match, right? The last one was 2011 in TNA. Who was it with? I forgot who it was. Sting.
Was it Sting?
I think it was. Yeah. I think it was Sting. I think his last match in TNA was Sting. Maybe Sting comes out.
That would be cool.
I think a lot of people assumed this was an AEW thing, and I didn't see it being an AEW thing. I think if they were going to do something with Flair, they would have done it with Andrade when they were kind of teasing at this a little bit. How do you feel about it? Do you think, like, do you have a problem with Ric Flair at his age with his health problems wrestling again? Or are you like, do you have my attitude? Like, listen, they probably know their bodies better than we do. I mean, they definitely do. So who am I to tell him he can't do it?
I think Conrad is originally my thought was, of course it's going to be Conrad. Like, Conrad knows how to, you know, promote anything. But what you said makes a lot of sense, I think, in that his son-in-law probably is going to make sure that he's going to be taken care of. Now, he can't, you know, it's like one of those things. It's like Rick probably is like, look, I'm going to do this, you know, no matter what. And Conrad's like, okay, let me see how I can do it to make sure that, you know, everything is safe and things are good for you. I sort of look at it, you know, like you said, now that you said it, but it's, you know, Rick's a grown up, right? I think that's part of it, is like a lot of us fans know all of the things about his life. And so we want to protect him from himself. And he's a grown up. He's got to do what he has to do in order to be happy in his life. And if that is wrestling in his early to mid 70s, you know, in front of a small crowd, just to say that, you know, I can look, you know, that after the horrific Rocky V, you know, Sylvester Stallone came back. What was it? Yeah. Mid 2000s, 2006. So Rocky V was in like 1990. He came back 15 years later to bring that character back. And that was the whole arc was,
yeah,
you know, well, why should anyone tell me whether or not it's time to stop? I want to make that decision. And so I almost want, you know, that's kind of what Rick is doing. Like, he's like, you know, I was in a health issue. Yeah, no.
Hogan comes out huffing and puffing. I know. Did you see that latest? There's a video I saw of him currently, and he's not walking well. He's in a lot of pain, that guy. Yeah, it's... Listen, man, you know, if Rick was moving great in that ring, impressive for a 73-year-old. Last time, I'm trying to think who we saw do this before. Buddy, I would say Luthez, right? 1990 with Chono. He was 73. I think he popped his new hip out.
Oh, God.
I just watched that match, too. It was terrible. But, you know, it's Luthez. He was doing his Luthez stuff.
Yeah.
Whose last match was in New Jersey? Was it Buddy Rogers? In 1991, 1992? I'm trying to remember this. Somebody had... I mean, he was up there, too.
You should have told me about this. I would have prepped and done my old observer's research to find out.
I'm trying to remember who it was. Maybe Dave would know. You know what? This is good trivia for Dave.
Yeah,
you know what? I believe it was Buddy Rogers. He died in 92. I think he had a match in, like, 1991.
What? Oh, my God.
I'm almost certain, man. For like a New Jersey promotion, somebody could pull this up. I can't find it, but I may have manifested this in my mind. Let's see. He is from New Jersey. Okay. He did have his last match. Tri-State Wrestling Alliance, the predecessor to Extreme Championship Wrestling, Eastern Championship Wrestling, in early 1992. But the promotion went out of business, and a match.
And then he passed away that year? Oh, okay.
The match never occurred, but I'm convinced that he had a match in like 91.
Mm.
I saw this. I saw it happen. I saw something.
You were there?
He died. No. Like later on in life, I saw a visual. I was not there. I was not there. He died in 92, so I think he had something in 91. Someone would be able to find this.
All right. I think it's a good time for us to wrap it up so I don't hear Lance in my ear again. Telling us we're going overtime. We don't need an overrun. We're not competing against WCW. No need for an overrun. We'll end it here. We'll be back next week, which is our own go home show to Double or Nothing, because we're going to do a show on our normal time at Tuesday, and then when we get to Vegas, the pregame show for the Sweet Party, we are going to do another. We're live, pal, there. So you'll get two shows from us, and we'll just talk about all the stuff that we've seen, all the craziness that's happened while we're in Vegas. We'll talk about that on that show. So, all right. Thank you to producer John. Thank you to Andrew. I'm Double G, and we will see you when we see you. Peace out.